as long as he gives the general class license call sign, and the general class license is the control operator of the station.
Saying that the technician that holds the technician license, when he does a station ID, he has to ID with the general's call. Is that correct?
I got there, Larry.
You are correct insofar as you went there, but technicians also have transmission privileges on some high-frequency bands. What I would suggest is you can go to the ARRL website, ARRL.net, maybe .com. I use a hard link on the desktop, so I haven't had to type it out in a while. But anyway, the band plan shows what all the technician privileges are. I've got one printed out and laminated here myself. Everybody should have something that's, you know, going to hold up with use. And let's see. No privileges on 160. Technicians can transmit CW only between 3.5 and 3.6 megahertz. Maximum of 200 watts. That's just one example. I mean, I could go through the whole thing, but there are four or five bands that technicians have privileges on. It might be data only. It might be CW only. Certainly, there are power limitations. They don't have the full 1,500 watts, you know. But they can use their own license in that event, KK4JVQ.
Well, poor NUE.
I think the intent of this question was to be a, can a technician operate outside of a technician high-frequency station? Let me rephrase that. So the technician wants to operate on the high-frequency bands out of the technician portion. And he wants to know if he can do that if there's a general in the controlling station and how to do that. So I think what has happened here is, I can't believe that either. I think that maybe there may have been a failure at a testing site for the general portion, and it happens. It happens to everybody. No disrespect intended. And he's wanting to operate in order to learn and then go back and retake. I think that's the intent here. So can the technician operate on a general frequency if the general is in the office, basically?
That's absolutely permissible. As long as the general class operator is present, you can use their call sign. Now, you use your own technician call sign, and you'll get called on it. And there are people listening. We never know who might be listening. So you use the general class operator's call sign, and you have their privileges. They must be present. KK4JBQ.
AI4LZI, go ahead. He broke in. I had a comment.
4LZI is kind of like the way field day operates. Usually at a field day situation, you go under one call sign. And most always it's an extra class call sign. I know one time we done an exercise over here in our group, and we said WX4PG slashed them. I said my own call sign afterwards, KI4LZI. I put the WX4PG first, slash KI4LZI.
I've got the band planned in front of me, and the only time a novice can, there ain't many novice left. The only time a technician can operate is on 10 meters between 28.3 and 28.5 megahertz with their only call sign. Any time you in another shack with a higher class operator, you've got to use their call sign first, slash your call sign. You correct, Andy?
Technician class licensees goes on 80, 40, let me see, I believe it was 20, and 10, there's CW privileges for technicians, plus on 10, there's 28.3 to 28.5 upper sideband that a technician can use.
Thing, we're just finding out so much here. On 6 meters, it's the same all the way across for extra, general, and techs. The same privileges on the bands, except that a technician can only use CW or data. The extra and generals can use the entire band, CW, and phone, and data. They had to make it worthwhile to take that last test, folks. KK4JPQ.
128.3 for technicians on CW. They don't have any other privileges above that on 10 meters. I'm looking at the latest chart here right in front of me from the FCC on 10 meters, and that's the, now they may be something else up there where they can use data, but I don't see it up there where they allow anything other than what's the basic from 80 meters down to 20 meters, where they are only allowed CW operations on the HF frequency, except on 10 meters, and that is from, they got 2800 or 28.3 for CW, 28.3 to 28.5 for phone privileges.
Okay, Walt, this is KO4NUE. I hope that answered his question. If it did not, then that station can shoot me a text and we'll revisit. But all right, if you don't mind, let's move on to the second question. And this one also came from outside anonymously, but I don't know the answer to it either. So I would like to know the answer to this. So what is a split, and why is it useful, and what is it used for? I've got a couple of programming cables in here, and my owner's manual for this Yaesu has a small section about a split. But I'm not able to understand exactly what that's used for and what it means. So any information would be helpful.
See, this is K4OIM. split frequencies are mainly used by DXers. That's where they transmit on one frequency and receive on another frequency to avoid the pileup, Chad. You gotta be in the DX and the split frequency. Am I correct, Andy or Larry?
JI4LZI4. I know back when they done the Mars thing, the Mars stations were taking hams with regular hams would use HF frequencies that were allocated, and the Mars stations would listen to them, but they would have to take and listen to what was legal for just normal hams to do. And Mars people would, it's kind of intermixing like it. They done on a lot in May when they done their, what I call, the way they called it, where Mars and normal hams communicated. They done a lot of split operating.
That's interesting, Andy. I hadn't thought of that. KK4JBQ. Walt is right. It's used DXing, and absolutely that's the reason given. Understand that if we're using the same frequency, such as we are here, we're talking on the repeater's input frequency, and it's transmitting back to us on its output frequency, which is different. That's an offset, and it's nothing more than an offset for the convenience of the operator who's calling the DX. So he won't be, when he wants to speak, he's doing it on one frequency, and he won't be talked over by somebody else trying to reach him, because he's talking to a frequency which is a few kilohertz up or a few kilohertz down, and they will announce that as they call. They'll say 5 up or 10 up, and that's kilohertz up, or they may want to go down. And that's the frequency you would use to call them. It's not terribly complicated, but what you can set your transceiver, if you've got an advanced transceiver, to automatically do that rather than dial it back and forth, if you understand what I mean. There's a split button on many transceivers, KK4JBQ.
Makes a lot of sense, because that just answered my first question. Who's used it? AI4L1A I've got. And before I ask this question, I'm just going to let you know, when I bought the radio, I didn't even have a license. I was studying to get my license, and they were so hard to get, I went ahead and ordered the thing, and me and Anna made the decision to pay up front because we wanted to get something that I could grow into. Understanding that when I bought the radio, it was much more than I needed. But now that I'm starting to ask questions, that's telling me that I may be ready to grow a little bit. So here's my question, which goes along with what I think a split does. Is on this radio, and Patrick, if you're listening, I have a VFOA and a VFOB, and I'm assuming that I have two VFOs so that I can put in that split. Is that correct?
That's right. You, with all these units, you got two VFOs, and as a result, you have to work a split.
Larry, thank you. Thank you, Andy. I appreciate it. I figured that's what it was. But is any additional comments for that?
The thing I got here is set up like that with a VFOA and VFOB. That's what allows you to be able to do the split.
thing, Chad, KK4JVQ, if you don't have another radio handy, it might be possible to explain it in the way that one would do cross-band repeat. That is to say, you're transmitting on one band and receiving on another band. And this would be this a very similar thing. You're transmitting on one frequency and receiving on another. I guess you could draw a chart. It's hard in words to explain this to someone who's really having a problem with what a split is. But it's a little like the cross-band repeat thing. Does that help?
Oh, no, brother. I got it. I got it. And it just clicked. When you said bands, if you try to imagine this in the same band, it gets confusing. But if you imagine it as I'm transmitting and he's receiving on, let's say, 20 meters, but he is transmitting and I am receiving on 40 meters. That makes a lot more sense to me, and it's a whole lot less confusing. And I guess that's exactly what Andy was saying at the beginning of the conversation, that once those hams will transmit on amateur bands, and then they'll listen on the Mars bands because they're not allowed to transmit on the Mars band. And that makes sense. But if you break it on down within the band, it's basically kind of sort of just like a repeater, I guess. But I could see the use, it being more useful in between bands instead of on the same band. But it'll work for both, correct?
JBQ, yes, that is correct. But don't overlook the fact that a lot of folks that are calling CQ, they're the distance station. They're the DX entity that you want to make contact with. Well, maybe it's you and 40 other people all at once. And if everybody's using the same frequency, it just gets a mess. It is a mess. Because unlike here, 2 meters is simplex, in a sense. We go up to the repeater, and the repeater repeats. Repeats what we say. But on HF, it is duplex. Everybody can talk, and they're talking on top of one another. The repeater won't let you do that here. You just hear nothing, or you hear somebody who's overpowering the other station. And you've heard people double, of course. So it's just an accommodation we make. The science is what it is, KK4JBQ.
LZF45D, I know I have heard others talk about using the lower end of 40 meters up in the advanced and extra class part where they would be listening down there and be transmitting down in the general class part for that very reason about pileup issues.
Okay, well, that makes a lot of sense. So I'm assuming that this radio is probably geared, a portion of it is geared for contesting and DXing, which, you know, I don't have an issue with that. That's just kind of not my thing. I like to, you know, have a conversation instead of just, you know, get a contact. But I can understand the context thing, contest and DXing thing too. But I think that kind of answered my question. Unless anybody got any more comments, we'll move on to the next question.
Hello, who's asking these questions? K4OIM. Are you asking them unknown questions? Are they coming from Anna?
I don't think she's into the HF thing, Walt. I think she's just trying to satisfy me, I guess, as far as talking on the radio. And be honest with you, we feel like our minds are starting to slip a little bit. And with this ham radio topic, it just kind of keeps us engaged mentally, and, you know, kind of keeps us sharp. That or I'm going to end up having to take Prevagen the rest of my life. I don't want to do that. I'd rather keep as sharp as I can, and ham radio definitely fills that gap.
Imagine me getting a, back when I got my license as a novice, that was one grade down from a technician. I can't imagine buying a radio like you got. It's about what I got sitting in front of me, with the split frequencies and all of the menu codes in it. It's got to be frustrating about all the filter chokes. You can just punch a button and click in. When I got into it, that was something extra you bought. You either had to solder them in, and then later on you could buy the modules and plug them in, and you jumped into it big time, buddy.
They say that because I have got some older gentleman that's been in ham radio a while, and that I stay in contact with. Since I got my license, didn't really know them until I got my license, but I hear them complain that I don't understand how you use a radio with all these menus and all these buttons and this, that, and the other. You know, I can't even understand it. And then the guys my age are saying, I don't understand anything about a vacuum tube. I don't know how it works. And why are you restricting me to just a couple of dials on the radio? I want all these buttons and that. So I guess it's just a generational thing. I don't have an issue with it because I know it's there. I may not know what it's for, but I'm comfortable enough with it to where, you know, the menu diving doesn't bother me or scare me or anything. It's just, I may not know what it is right now, but as I progress in this hobby, I know that there will be a need to eventually, where I get to a point where I say, okay, well, that's what that button's for, or that's what that menu does, or so you understand what I'm saying?
Going to the Shelby Ham Fest Saturday, looking for one thing, a no-heat kit HW60. I want me an old tube-type transmitter, one that where you've got to load it, dip it, load it, dip it, with the grid and the low control operators. Knobs, not to burn the finals out in it, and then look at your meter and see how many milliamps you're putting out, so you'll know how many watts you're putting out. And we didn't have SWR meters back then, Chad. You hooked a 100-watt light bulb up to it. And when you peeked that light bulb out to where it was glowing the brightest, you knowed you were on top.
The old tube gear back in the day would tolerate high SWR a lot better than this solid-state stuff that cuts back on the power if it's too high. But back when you got your license back in the wall in the late 70s, from what I read, had to operate crystal controlled on transmit, and you could use a receiver to receive anything, but you had to operate crystal controlled. Am I correct about that?
100%, and 100%, all whistle control.
Books here that dates back into that time, and that's what I read about, so somebody else go and pick it up, KI4LZI.
4JBQ. This makes me think of, oh goodness, the first few weeks. I was using my technician license to learn. I didn't have a radio. I didn't have radio for a while. So everything I was reading, I had to imagine what was going on. And I was studying for the general right away, of course. So this load the filament and dip the plate was interesting to me because I hadn't worked with any radio yet. But the way it was described, it was so easy to picture that you would load the filament with current, and then you'd watch your dip meter and dip the plate in order to have the strongest deflection in the meter. And that was, it was in balance, and that was every time you changed to any extent the frequency you were transmitting on, that's what you had to do. Terribly interesting. Well, the reason why, as Andy says, a tube set tolerates high SWRs is because tubes are high impedance devices. Just physically, that's what they impede the current. So, but the finals in a transistor set are low impedance devices, and that current will just rush on through and destroy them. So that's why that's the case. KK4JBQ.
So I got one more question and one statement. So Patrick, Daniel, y'all still in? You got a question, or if you want me to drive on?
And I'm still here, KO4HKX.
Good, I'm just listening, KI4DTY.
I'm going to give my statement first before I ask my question, because they're not related. So I have finally done it in the past 2 days in an effort to try to understand how an antenna works, and this has been a topic that we've talked about on more than one occasion. So I have finally done it. I have been to the end of YouTube, and I have been to the end of Google, and I am no more smarter about an antenna than I was before I started my search. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to stick a piece of RF cable to the back of my radio and hook the center conductor to one piece of wire, and then I'm going to take the shield and hook to another piece of wire, and if my antenna tuner will tune it, I'm going to talk on it. Anybody see any problems with that? That easy. So, all right, well, I'll find some other way, or just another, just maybe I need to just let it soak a while and try to figure out exactly what's happening. I'm not exactly sure tonight's that night. I may need to just ask the right questions, and maybe I'm not at that point yet. So let's just set that one aside until another Tuesday night. So here's my last question. And so I made a contact about a month ago in Texas. Or tried to, and there were several stations trying to reach this contact, and I guess he was doing some contesting or DXing or whatever. And I made contact with the guy, and he repeated my call. But after he said my call, he said, moving on, and he took the next call. And I tried to make contact with him again, and no answer. So a couple weeks later, I made contact with the same guy in Texas. and he gave me a word of advice, and he was very respectful about it, and I never really thought about it, but I just want to bring this before y'all and see what you, you know, if you agree with it or what, but he made a polite suggestion and asked me, he said, I know that you've got your general ticket, which means he verified my call, but he made a suggestion that I change my call. And I said, well, that was the call that was issued to me from the government, and I've gotten used to it, and I'm kind of, you know, kind of fond of it. And he says, well, I can understand that. Some people do that. He said, but when you are talking with other stations that are much more experienced and they hear that KO call, they don't really, some of them don't really want to converse with you because of initially what your, what they think your entry level is. And that is the second time I have heard that, and I just want to get, you know, y'all's input on that. Is that right? Is that a correct statement in what he was telling me, or what?
He's an asshole.
They figure you don't know anything and they don't want to communicate with you.
Right.
That's, you have to expect some will be that way, some won't be that way. But if one thing about it, if you do decide to change your call, you better do it before next year when they start charging that fee for it. Because sometime next year is when they'll start charging the fee to do it.
U.E.
So Andy and Larry, I think y'all doubled, and I think Andy kind of won out there in the end. So basically, I didn't get much of that, Andy, other than do it before, you know, next year, before they charge you the fee, and that some people just assume you don't know that much, which I don't. I'll admit that right off the bat, but I'm going to keep digging. I don't care what anybody says. I'm going to keep trying and trying to learn. So go back with it. There was a big double in there.
Go ahead, Larry.
Okay, K4JBQ. All I said when we doubled was that the perception that this discrimination is taking place, that the perception is correct, but I believe it's wrong to do that. And why do I think it's wrong to do that? Well, once I was in a place where I didn't know Jack. And people around me, all around me, offered me more than I could consume in knowledge. And so I had to gear it up a little bit. And that encouraged me because they would, quite frankly, they would get off on... I'd ask them a simple question, I thought, and it would go crazy. And they'd be talking for 10 minutes. I have since gotten over that. There's a hump to get over, of course. Anybody who knows a little more than anybody else, you've got two ways to go. You can hold it over those folks that don't know as much as you do, or you can teach. You can be that Elmer. You can help another person with a hand up. So you know where I'm going. KK4JPQ.
KI4DTY. But my second part of that is how, you know, I'm a newbie as well, so how do you even find an Elmer?
DQ, Walt, you're right. This is the modern day way of Elmering. People have tried. But it used to be, I mean, the world was a different place. It used to be that a kid, 12 years old, 14, something like that, would get interested in radio, and he'd go around his neighborhood, and he'd find somebody with a big old antenna in the backyard. And you could see it over the top of the house. And he'd walk up to the door, and he'd knock on the door, and he says, "Are you a ham?" And they'd say, "Yes." Or they would say, "Yes." And he'd say, "Well, I would like to learn how to get a license." And that would start a relationship with this older ham and a young kid. And it was a different world. And today, it's different for so many reasons. We don't need to go into that. But the truth is, this is a good place to exchange information. Walt has just been a saint to see that the need was here. And you folks are kind enough to bring the questions. And we feel challenged sometimes for answers. But this is how it's done today. KK4JBQ.
Of course, not everybody knows to do it. Started out listening here way back in the late 70s on this very repeater, and I listened on and off for decades, and I didn't actually get my license until 05. That's kind of, if there's any way, y'all already got y'all's licenses, but that's kind of how my airmen came. KI4LZI.
I respect that, and that's how you do it, and that's great. But what is, I guess, kind of happened with me is that I initially started that way, and I guess I'm the type of person. Well, I guess all of us are in some way. You always kind of want something you can't really have. And I tried the listening thing, and I strung me a piece of wire and just laid it out on the fence post and plugged it up to the back of my radio just to listen. And I heard all these stations in Europe, and especially Cuba. Cuba's kind of funny because you got one station that's kind of pro-government, and then the other station is kind of some kind of resistance or something, and they're both talking trash about one another, and I couldn't do it. I just like, this listening thing is, I want to get involved, and I can only do half of that by listening. So that was a portion of my motivator, and I think as far as the whole Elmer thing goes, my granddad taught me a long time ago that there's two parts to learning. One is the apprentice, and the other is the teacher. Both of them have to step out of their comfort zone a little bit, but more on the apprentice side and show interest. Because today's teachers, unless you're, you know, a paid school teacher, if you have an older person trying to teach a younger person, and that younger person doesn't want to listen, then they're not going to waste their time. And I get that. I do. And that's why it's, you know, just, I'm just so delighted to have this kind of education. Even though it's over the radio, it's still pretty, it's still important to me anyway. And the other thing I'll say is that I can understand, Larry, why some men want to hold on to information. And I don't think it's being greedy or anything like that. I think it's that if they had a younger person to pursue them and say, hey, and show some interest, I'm sure that would break them down a little bit to be able to divulge a little bit of information. But if you've got a whole lot of knowledge and somebody's got to really show you that you're interested in it and pursue them. And that's my big motivator when people tell me, well, you need to change your call because you got an amateur call, and, you know, or they fuss a little bit on this net or that net because I do something wrong and this, that, and the other. And 27 years of military, that's the direct opposite. It doesn't matter what they say or what they do. If you've got a goal, you do it. And you don't, you know, the people try to put you in a hole, you just move around them and stay focused on what you're doing. So that's what I'm doing, and I just appreciate everybody, Andy and Larry and Gary and Walt for helping out on this, because I don't know what I'd do, you know. I guess just go back through Google again, I guess.
KO4 in UE. Oh, you got me?
Larry, was that about right?
True, and I'll give you a little insight into just how right your thinking is. There aren't many occupations left where there are formal apprenticeships, but I apprenticed some 30 years ago as a jeweler, a silversmith, a goldsmith, and a watchmaker. It was a formal apprentice. It was 6 years that I was the apprentice, and I had a master jeweler, a master watchmaker, and learned the trades. And after all that time, and then I became the master jeweler myself, the master watchmaker myself, and I taught others. It's how that is, and how the Elmering program actually developed it, sort of copied that. It does rely on two people, one willing to give and the other willing to receive. If you throw something in there, like some youngster does not any longer have an interest, or they didn't realize it was that deep or something, is coming too fast or whatever, then you have to make that known. You have to ask the questions over and over again, perhaps, if you didn't get the right answer the first time. So I can really relate to how you're thinking of it. I really can. And before we close this up tonight, I'd like you to pose that antenna question again. It sounded interesting. At least your question sounded interesting, and I'd like an opportunity to respond to it. KK4JBQ.
Y'all still here later on. I'll come back. I got to get out now, though. Take some insulin off, KI4LZI4.
Well, I am. Can you hear me?
Mr. Walt, KK4JBQ.
KO4, NUE. Don't change that call sign. If you're interested in learning Morse code, which I know you are, think about it.
If I've got it now.
Go ahead, Larry. I'm listening.
Walt is exactly right. A lot of times, in the past especially, people would change the call sign issued to them by the FCC simply to have a better CW call sign. One thing you do not want is a call sign that ends in K. Because K, if separated from your call sign, in the usual exchange, K is the next symbol to send, and it means back to you or over to you. And that could be misconstrued as being a part of your call sign. Let's say you've got a 2-2 call. It's an extra class call, but you'll get there someday. And it's if you are issued a 2-2 call and you have a K at the end, it'll confuse a lot of people because you could be seen as a 2-3 call if you don't put the right amount of space between your call sign and the K. CW is one of those creatures, KK4JBQ.
Okay, absolutely. You know, there you go. See, didn't even consider the CW portion of it and how those letters look on the CW side. So, K1DTW, Daniel, you know, might need to, me and you might need to pull out a Morse code chart for now, and maybe listen or see how that sounds, because I know eventually I'm going to end up there, but I got to get some basics down first. So, yeah, Larry, you're right. I appreciate you letting me know that, and Walt, you too. I didn't even think of that portion of it. But go ahead with the antenna thing, Larry.
Everybody's getting maybe getting tired, but I still got a little steam. To understand the signal path from the back of your radio, this is how you open it up from the back of your radio to the rest of the world. How does it get out of your radio? Where does it go? How is it impeded? That's a loaded word, isn't it? How is it impeded, or how is it encouraged? And what advantage can you use because you understand antennas? Is that kind of the question? I'm trying to understand the question better.
Understand what an antenna does in its pure, in its basic form. It takes whatever my radio does to my voice, and it electronically and magnetically on different polarizations transmits my carrier, and the radio decodes that on the receive side. I got. It's down in the weeds that I don't have. In other words, why does it have to be a certain length? Which I probably can get that if I look at the length of the waveform, and I think I know the question to that is that the length of the antenna needs to be a certain segment of the waveform length, I'm pretty sure. But this whole impedance thing, as far as the coax goes, I just can't understand why that's relevant. Why can't I just hook the antenna straight up to the back of the radio? I don't understand why I need to. It seems like I'm having to, if I put coax on it and I introduce impedance, why would I want to slow things down? It seems like me, I'd want to sling it out the antenna as fast as I could. I just can't get through that.
It is resistance.
That is interesting the way you put that. The important group of words you want to commit to memory, this is a way to think about it, is to match impedance. Your radio has electronically an expected impedance, and the industry standard is for amateur radio is 50 ohms. Industry standard, interestingly, for video is 75 ohms. So the coax, if you're using wire coax and not not fiber optics for your internet connection, that coax is 75 ohms. That's a video standard. The radio standard is 50 ohms. That's what the radio is designed to expect to see. So why 50 ohms? It's because that was agreed upon long before you and me. And the coax is an improvement, actually occurred during World War II, an improvement over other types of feed lines, because it can be used in many conditions with no problem with bringing it through the house, through even a steel security door or something like that. You can run it right through a steel door because it's sheathed. The braid, it's two conductor. The center conductor is, you might think of it as the positive, and the shield actually has two sides. It has the inside near the center conductor and the outside near the sheath, the coating on the thing. Do you understand the way coax is constructed, and that it was an improvement over two wires, and that it goes up to the antenna, and at the antenna, it's just the radio still expects that impedance to stay the same all the way out into the atmosphere. The antenna might not be 50 ohms, so you might need an impedance match at the antenna. You might need a choke as it enters the house. There are certain devices that are used to solve problems. An impedance matching transformer, a one-to-one choke. Certainly if your feed line itself is not 70, if it's not 50 ohms, that match has to be accomplished. So the antenna is made up of a lot of little pieces, but all of it is counted as one impedance. You got to match the radio, KK4JBQ.
Maybe this would help me, and it is getting late. I know, well, I guess people could just turn the radio off, I guess, but maybe other people want to use radio. So how about this for next week? Can you give me an alternate word for impedance? Because I have got impedance stuck in my brain that is, I am seeing this, what comes out of my radio as a velocity, and maybe that's what's throwing me. I can't understand why I am impeding. When people get an amplifier, they want more power. So why in the world would I do anything to my antenna to impede it?
But KK4JBQ, maybe it wasn't the best word to choose, but our use of the word was not the only use for this, and I'll give you a reason why here. Think of the symbol that's used to express numerically what impedance is. The symbol is the ohm. 50 ohms impedance. Well, that sounds like resistance. Well, resistance is impedance, is resistance. You see? It's so similar, those two words, and the physical thing that happens is so similar. And it's the I was hoping you'd catch it in the way I said it before. You want a match. If you have an impedance mismatch, the flow, as you call it, you know, slinging out the RF, your flow is disrupted because it's a flow not of it's not a bullet through the air. It's not squirting water out of hose or anything like that. It is a waveform. And the waveform will, if the impedances are different, and there are many instances where that would occur, if the impedances are different, you'll hear people say there's an impedance bump there, a bump. And what happens is that the waveform changes momentarily. Say through PL259, that's an impedance mismatch, and there's a reason for that. A matched or what's called a constant impedance connector would be an N connector or a BNC connector. Those are 50 ohm impedance connectors. You attach that to your 50 ohm radio, you attach it to the coax, which is 50 ohms by design. If it's designed 50 ohms, the waveform stays the same, and it goes out easy. Everything's organized, lined up, marching in the same direction. Does that help? KK4JBQ.
All right, I think I'm on it. So the impedance match needs to happen between the coax and the antenna. So that's where the mismatch is created. Is that right? So, in other words, if I have one antenna that's, I don't know, 160 feet long, it's going to have a different impedance than my coax cable. So my impedance, that the reason that I impedance is so important is that no matter how long or short my antenna is, that impedance needs to match on the feed line and the antenna. And the radio is checking through SWR to make sure that that impedance is there, or that impedance match is there. Am I close?
Comment.